From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, well, he says humankind has been around for millions of years. Michael Cremo is his name, and he'll be our special guest. Well, I don't know why the intuitive psychics continue to give specific dates, because in the Middle East, August 3rd has come and gone now, and there was no major bombing explosion as predicted by some, including, of course, Sean David Morton, who said, based on interpretation of Bible code, August 3rd would have been a very deadly day. They even talked about atomic, but that has not happened now. In Sean's somewhat defense, he did elaborate that the dates could be wrong and they would be more spread out into 2006. But again, psychics pick some of these specific dates, and sometimes they come and go and nothing happens most of the time. And I think they need to just stop with the dates and talk more about their feelings and what they think could happen. U.S. scientists say they have determined that the Earth's gravity, listen to this story, changed as a result of the giant 2004 Sumatran earthquake. The discovery marked the very first time that scientists have used satellite data to detect changes in the Earth's surface caused by a massive earthquake. This discovery signifies a new use for data from NASA satellites and offers a possible new approach to understanding how earthquakes work. The 9.1 magnitude December 2004 Sumatra earthquake in the Indian Ocean produced a tsunami that killed 230,000 people, displaced more than 1 million others. The event followed the slipping of two continental plates under the seafloor. The earthquake changed the gravity in that part of the world in two ways that they were able to detect, according to a scientist at Ohio State University. He says he and his colleagues determined that the quake triggered the massive uplift of the seafloor, changing the geometry of the region and altering previous global positioning satellite measurements of the area, and the density of the rock beneath the seafloor shifted, producing detectable gravity changes. In a moment, we're going to check in with Stan Deo about all these earth changes and what lies ahead. In Portland, did dogs sense an earthquake there? If people are looking for early earthquake warnings, they might want to check with dogs. It turns out that a dozen dogs were very anxious and frantically barking at the Oregon Humane Society shelter, giving off a different vibe, according to the executive director of that shelter. Hours later, a 3.8 magnitude earthquake occurred near Battleground, Washington. No damage or injuries reported, but they think these animals sense them. I believe that. I mean, look at the elephants in the Sumatran quake. They just took off for the hills way before that tsunami hit. The sweltering heat that has confirmed now at least 14 deaths in the East and Midwest this week. It continues. The eastern part of this country really getting slammed with record demand for electricity. In China, hundreds of thousands of people were evacuated in southern China as a typhoon slammed into the mainland, pounding an area already battered by storms and more heavy rains and winds on the way. Ford Motor Company announcing one of the largest recalls in history. Here we go, recalling 1.2 million trucks, sport utility vehicles, and vans amid concerns of potential engine fires. Isn't that nice? Well, Ford said the recall was tied to the speed control deactivation switch system, which could corrode over time, overheat, catch on fire. I'm going to give you the vehicles in question just so you know, even if one of you has one of these, it's worth it. The recall involves vehicles fueled by gasoline or natural gas and equipped with speed control, including the 1994 to 2002 F-250s, F-350s, F-450s, F-550s, F Super Duty trucks, 2000 to 2002 Excursion SUVs, the 1994 to 96 Econoline vans, 1996 to 2002 E450 vans, and 1998 Explorers and Mountaineers. The recall does not involve similar vehicles fueled by diesel. Cell phones have been banned inside five branches of the First National Bank in Chicago to enhance security. Even using a cell phone in the bank's lobby could result in you being asked to simply leave the premises. They believe that bandits have been using cell phones dealing with their friends, lookouts, while they commit their bank robberies. So banks are starting to get smart, saying no cell phone use in the bank. Hezbollah rockets fired into northern Israel killed 8 civilians on Thursday, as 4 Israeli soldiers were also killed in ground operations inside Lebanon in the deadliest day of violence for Israel. Israeli casualties came as a senior official said that they are going to keep pushing to secure an 18-mile buffer zone. A Department of Homeland Security plan to require port workers to carry tamper-proof photo ID cards has numerous security problems that threaten to delay this plan. In an audit, Homeland Security Inspector General Richard Skinner and his review of prototype systems at participating U.S. ports, that are controlled, by the way, by Dubai ports in some cases, identified vulnerabilities in the Transportation Worker Identification Credential Program. The weaknesses, some of which were deemed high risk, included instances of false positives in detecting which workers might pose a security risk, as well as cases in which the system inadvertently disclosed sensitive personnel information inappropriately. Unbelievable. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, look under Hot Stories. There is a man, he was drunk, he was rushed to the hospital after trying to perform a sword swallowing routine. He made a bet with his friends, I guess he won, 23 years old, but this guy had to be rushed to the hospital after swallowing a knife with an 8-inch blade, 8 nails, 2 spoons, and a couple of clothes pegs to win the bet. They had to operate on his stomach, they cut him open, and also they did a little work on his throat. He's lucky his stomach and intestines were not significantly injured, according to doctors. Now, in a moment, Stan Dale, we're going to check in with Stan. We're going to have him on for the entire hour. We're going to talk about just what's going on this planet. We'll be back with Stan Dale on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Dale has held above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Stan has lectured on many world events, which include the coming global economic collapse, and we have talked with Stan numerous times on Coast to Coast. Stan, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm well, I guess, at this time of the night. It's been a while since we've talked.
It has. And by the way, our condolences on the passing of your father.
Thank you very much. We have put up a tribute to him on the website.
Quite an individual he was, Stan.
Well, yes. Even some of the family didn't know what he'd been involved in years ago. And after the close of World War II in 1946, when he was working for Howard Hughes and American intelligence over in the Middle East, trying to keep the Russians out of there. He managed to bluff them and keep them out. And now, 60 years later, looks like they're coming back again.
How old was he, Stan, when he passed on?
86. Had a good run. So.
He sure did. He sure did. Well, I hope we can be as lucky, huh?
Hey, you bet.
Hey, Stan, what's been going on this planet lately? I mean, Cleveland getting earthquakes over the last several weeks, lots of them, small ones, but they are getting earthquakes, a lot of things starting to happen on the coasts again. I mean, things feel strange.
They are strange. There's no question about it. I do the analysis of the sea surface temperatures with the data I get from the Navy every day, and I've kept a record for the last 10 years, day by day, of these maps and temperature variations in the sea surface temperature. And something weird has happened this year in the last 6-7 months that has caused a rather strange heating of the North Pacific and part of the North Atlantic on both sides of the United States, obviously. This heating is also accompanied by some cooling in the North Pacific. Now, up on the website, I've had Holly put something called weird heating. That's a great title, but anyway, It shows this difference year by year from the year 2001 up to now in August, on the same date today, 3rd of August, and it shows red and blue colors in the ocean to show the actual variation in temperature where the area heated up or cooled down anomalously. And you can see there that normally the anomalous heating is up closer to the pole, 2,000 miles higher than it is now. And it's dropped down this year to where it's hitting Europe, it's hitting the New England states, the United States, and it's hitting the middle of the North Pacific between Japan and Washington and Oregon. So there's two maps up there. I'll describe them because, you know, obviously people won't be able to see them all, but if they're not on the Internet. But the amount of temperature variation in the North Pacific is absolutely huge in the last year. To give you an example, if the whole planet were to cool down by about 2 to 2.5 degrees centigrade,
right, which might not seem like a lot, but it is when you're talking about an Earth change.
It is. Well, the last time that happened, we had the Great Ice Age,
and it killed. Oh my gosh!
Okay, right. Now sitting in a spot right underneath the Aleutian Islands and in between Japan and let's say about Oregon, there are two spots, two huge spots that are like maybe 1,000 miles long. And one side has dropped temperature in the last year by 5 degrees centigrade, and the other side has increased by 5 degrees. There's a 10-degree differential.
Okay.
You see this on, you go on the website and you look at that global extreme heating and cooling picture, and, you know, it's not planetary-wide. Say, I'm not saying it's the whole planet, but just in that spot. But that is producing an immense weather disturbance, which is affecting the jet stream and obviously our rainfall and drought across the United States. It's just an anomaly.
Is it possible, Stan, that an undersea volcano is erupting on the hot spot and maybe one went out, stopped erupting on the cold spot?
I don't think so this time because of how long these things are, long, stretchy things. They're not like like plumes would be from you know, a volcano erupting or magma flows. What is concerning me about this particular one is a little known fact that the Japanese scientists brought out several years ago, and that was this: if you have water that is hot, it is less dense than cold water, and it weighs less than the cold water. Now, where the separation between this hot and cold anomaly in the North Pacific is at the moment is right along the Mendocino Fault, which becomes the San Andreas Fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very concerned about that. If this continues at this rate, it's going to put uneven weights above and below that fault ridge, the Mendocino Fault line. And we could see, you know, things trigger rather unhappily in Northern California or Southern Oregon.
Well, you said on our predictions television show several months ago that you thought San Francisco could get some big quakes this year, and that region just had a 4.4. Do you still think this is the case?
I think it is possible this month. If it doesn't happen now, we're going to have to go to the first 4 months of 2007. We've also got on the website a bar graph showing San Francisco and a 100-kilometer radius around it for earthquakes that we've analyzed over the last, 35 years, from 73 to 2006, whatever that is. And you'll see in there some bar graphs showing the number of quakes that occur in any given year in that period in a month, certain month, in January, February, whatever. July, over those last 33 years or so, has been the least likely month for earthquakes in San Francisco of any kind. The most likely month of all is March. And March, you know, it's March and April both are just huge. The risk factor there is like 28.5% above normal in March and 19% above normal in April. January is 11% above. Now then, I think that that's probably going to be when it hits San Francisco, but it could hit this month, even though we're only about 4% above the norm for that period, you know, for the annual
sure.
period.
Stan, we've got about a zillion people that listen to us in the Midwest out of Cleveland, WTAM. And
right.
Cleveland has been having a series of small earthquakes. What the heck is going on there? And don't they have a nuclear power plant in that region?
They do. They have the Perry Nuclear Power Plant in Lake County there, which is close to Cleveland. And that was put in 1987. And that was about a year after they had a 5.0 quake there in Lake County. And so they reinforced the building to take a 6.0. So a 3.8 occurred back in June, late June. And that set off alarms on the plant, and they had 30 inspectors or so running out there searching for any indication of cracked pipes or leakage of radioactivity and all that kind of stuff. So it's a concern to Cleveland to keep, you know, an earthquake from cracking that power plant. But there's been every 2 weeks now since the beginning of the year, every 2 weeks there's been an earthquake there in the Cleveland area.
That's strange, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's like a harmonic pattern. You know, I don't like to see equal spacings like that in the earthquakes or volcanoes, for that matter.
I understand this rhythm. Then there's a danger to the rhythm.
Yeah. When I see a rhythm, it's like a bubble, or, you know, or something. It's hitting at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the days is going to knock it open, I'm afraid. And that's just. You know, it's too close to things happening in the New Madrid area for my liking.
Is that the fault line that goes up there through Cleveland? I know it goes through St. Louis, New Madrid.
It goes up that far, and I'm not sure what happens to it after that because the data we get is rather skimpy in the New England states as well. But it does tend to look like it's going up into there and turning right and going up into New York. So, yeah, I'm concerned about it. It's not a time to be. You know, resting on your laurels, I think people should be aware of this and be reinforcing buildings and homes and in areas where they've never had to. I mean, you in California, I mean, you've probably got those special kind of locks on your cabinets and things to keep them from, you know, falling open in a quake and throwing things all over the kitchen.
Well, and I know our building here floats, you know, it's in case something happens. But I don't know about the older ones out here, Stan.
No, well, look, it's probably not practical to do all of them. I'm sure that they've done the major infrastructure they could.
And then I go back to St. Louis where we're on the New Madrid Fault. So I can't get away from this.
Boy, you are a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
I mean, I'm doomed.
Doomed. Yeah, no, it's not average right now. Things are really weird and wonderful out there, and when I see these extreme heat and cold patterns in the ocean, especially the ocean, that just worries the dickens out of me because it's exactly what I thought would happen as we started approaching this 24th solar cycle with the solar wind and the impact it has on our temperatures.
Speaking of heat, I mean 100-degree temperatures across the country for so long. People are going crazy, and I'm not sure the grid's going to hold out too much longer. What's going on with the temperature on the planet, not in the water?
Well, I mean, the water affects that, too. That's where the engine kind of starts, you know, when the waters get hot, in certain areas they boil up steam and or water vapor, and that rises quickly. But on other areas that aren't heated, next to it, they're cool, and it forms these vortices, and then the Coriolis forces take over as the Earth spins, and whirls them into big superstorms. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we don't have hurricanes form over land for a short way, even on the West Coast, especially on the West Coast, further south toward California, I suppose. But
how about Mount St. Helens? What's happening there?
Well, Mount St. Helens has been punching up a new spine, or a dome, they call it there. And that spine has, over the last 2 years, been pushing up at a 4 or 5 feet a day. And back in, early June, I think it was, it was 300 feet already above the base of the crater floor that was left after the last eruption. And that means it's pushed up more than 100 million cubic yards of magma now, which is enough rock to fill about a football field about 10 or 11 miles high. That's a lot, but it would take probably 100 years at that rate to fill up the mountain to where it was before it blew.
Is this a good thing or bad thing that the dome is building?
Well, I'd rather that it didn't build at all. But with these kind of things, since there's such a long time between events normally, This may be an episode on the long scale that will surprise us. I mean, the guys that that watch this are saying it could go suddenly again, and it may not.
All right.
So it's 50-50.
Stay with us, Stan. We're going to take phone calls for you. If you have an earth change question, now's the time, because we've got the expert, Stan Deyo. His website, standeyo.com, D-E-Y-O, by the way, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And our guest this hour, Stan Deyo. We're going to talk with Stan about Yellowstone in a moment and also take your phone calls. Hey, I've got 100 After Dark double CDs left, and then that is it. The supply is gone. If you want to take advantage of getting the complimentary copy of the double CD, which includes ghost stories, bumper music, and great calls to the show, you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. A couple ways to do that. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. In the August issue, by the way, great article about the life of none other than David Icke. And welcome back, Stan Deyo, our guest. Stan, Yellowstone, it appears to be quiet, I hope, is it?
Yep. It does, and I think it just runs through cycles as well. I'm not sure yet, probably won't be until it happens, if it happens in our lifetime, but I'm not sure whether the next eruption of that will be as bad as the last great huge one, you know, that covered so much of the southwestern and western United States.
And that was about 600,000 years ago, something like that?
Oh, give or take a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere back there. I know that we're down here in about the middle of Colorado, and we're, you know, if it were to go and put the ash out the same amount it did then, this far away, we would still get a foot and a half or so of ash.
My God. So, it would wipe out the planet, wouldn't it?
Well,
or at least the United States.
Well, the United States, and the direct, you know, the direct effects of the dust falling, the ash. It's really sharp little particles that cut your lungs when you breathe it in. That stuff would probably hit most of the United States. Some of the lighter particles might go over to the United Kingdom and up into Canada, but I think the major problem would be over the next year or two that we would have nuclear winters, or a lot of the crop-growing areas would not see daylight.
And here we are, the biggest producer of product in terms of plant life and in corn and wheat and everything else. If that gets wiped out, the whole planet starts to starve.
Well, there's a lot more mouths to feed in the poorer nations to the west of us. They're having their problems with drought and production and flood in some areas, and just like we are here, and already without Yellowstone erupting, we're having problems with our crop failures. So I'm concerned now. I mean, I can see we're on the edge of famine starting.
Let's go to the phone, Stan. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes,
sir. My
name's
Mike. I'm in Illinois.
Okay, Mike.
Hey, a question for you, Stan. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Edgar Cayce, I've heard a lot about this map, supposed things that could change.
Yeah,
earth changes and what have you. I've never had the opportunity to see the map or hear anybody talk about how that would affect the middle of Iowa. I was wondering, would that be underwater within that map? Or
I don't think so. I think there's going, according to his map, there was going to be certainly west of the Rockies is going to have a lot of trouble, subsidences and islands, and part of Florida and some of the Gulf Coast states, and then up there might have even been a. Gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think it was a large river going up into the Great Lakes or coming down, as your point of view.
Yeah, that would swell. You know,
yeah.
The Mississippi would swell dramatically too.
Yeah. So I think that I would be okay. Yeah. Actually, my dad was from Council Bluffs, Iowa, up there, but I think it'd be okay.
One of the few states that would be okay. Hey, thanks for the call, Michael. Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast.
Thanks, Mike.
First time caller line. Where are you?
Kathy from Oregon.
Okay, Kathy, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if the pole changes in, like, the Earth's magnetic field had anything to do with the temperature changes?
Well, that's a good question. I do think there is a real strong link between the magnetic field of the planet and heating of the surface of the planet. And the reason I do is that two or three times over the last 10 years, there's been real big sunspot eruptions, or like a solar flare is more like it, from coronal holes that have thrown out lots of charged protons toward the Earth in the solar wind, and they've hit so hard and for such a sustained period that I've watched the North Pole drift by 20 degrees, the magnetic pole, and I've seen it make huge, like 600 or 700 mile diameter heat spots in the North Pacific that then bounced the next day over into the South Atlantic. So I know there's a correlation, and I think it, all these things put together don't sound good.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Hey, what do you think of these Portland dogs sensing possibly the earthquake out there?
Oh, look, I'm one of these guys that supports that. We used to have a couple of dachshunds, miniature dachshunds, and down in Australia, and I remember sitting there when the earthquake, one of them was starting, or hadn't even started yet, just a small quake, but the dachshund got funny, like running around in a circle and very nervous, and then everything got real quiet, and then the earthquake hit. So I think they can sense it a lot sooner, you know, a lot further ahead than that. But I did witness it firsthand, and all dogs may not do it, but I think that the animals, you know, snakes and elephants and stuff, and the one in Sumatra proved the point. You know, they were getting safety.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hi, good evening. This is Richard in Nevada.
Hi, Richard.
Hi,
George. Good luck on the book. I hope that you do a book signing here in Nevada.
We'll try to do it all over the country, Richard.
I know you will. You'll be spread thin. The best of luck to you with the book.
Thank you, Richard.
Stan, my question has to do with the Pacific Plate and the North American Plate and how far it would affect and what might happen within the next year. I know that George mentioned the other night we had a 6.7 in Northridge. It was a 6.9, and on the Mercalli scale, it was a 9.1. What do you see for the coming year in along that whole fault line with those two plates? And thank you for taking the call.
All right, Richard, thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Well, I guess I've got to say at the front here, I base my things on what hard evidence I could put together, you know, the statistical and mathematical data. And I can't tell you exactly, you know, a year ahead what's going to happen. I do sense from what I'm seeing with the patterns of earthquakes down in the Southwest Pacific near New Guinea, Indonesia, and some of them, well, in the last couple of days down in New Zealand, that area is building up to something to release pressure again, which is directly across the pond from the west coast of the United States. There is a correlation between opposite sides of the Ring of Fire in the Pacific. So I tell you what, I feel sorry for the poor people in San Francisco because I think that's where we're going to see this stuff start, either there or just north of it, you know, between Mendocino and San Francisco.
What can people do to get ready, Stan? I mean, this may not happen, and then it may. And, you know, what can they do cost-effectively, just to be prepared a little bit?
Well, obviously, if they're on high ground, that would probably survive these things. If they're up in mountain regions, I think just putting in a normal amount of supplies and water and things would do. Emergency medical and radios to see what's happening. But no matter whether you're on high ground or down in the city, I think one of the big problems you're going to have is that you're going to have to deal with the emergency basically where you are. If it cracks it so bad that you start water flooding, people will panic. The roadways won't work. Cars will be useless because you can't drive over everybody else that's stalled or crashed around you. So we've made suggestion that people have something that will float, like styrofoam packing in a net bag or something that you can hold on to. That won't help you much, but it'll keep you afloat to get to something that's up above the water.
Or hopefully somebody be able to come by and pull you out.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to... You have more information on your website about things like that?
Oh, George, we have... Holly's put up a huge amount on the preparedness site, which is it's all free up there. You can just go in and click.
Good.
I think
okay.
It's about the fifth button down.
Well, that's pretty cost-effective.
Yeah, it is. It's just common sense, a lot of it, and you can handle these problems. I mean, it's that's why she's put all this together, is that there's a way to prepare for these things, not just sit down and say, oh, woe is me. Prepare.
Say hi to Holly for me, by the way.
Holly,
I should have said that in the beginning.
Hi. She's waving.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Say again.
Oh, to the wild card we go.
Oh, hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, George. Yeah. It's Tina, and I want to say hi to Stan, and I am so grateful to you and Holly for the wonderful work that you've done. I would
Thank
like
you.
Your information to get out more widely. I know you're working on it diligently to do that. I have a question quick about what, since you worked for the government, what is the reaction from the government on your work? I know Professor McCanny gets harassed and that, and then also the scientific community. And then the second question is, I recall Richard C. Hoagland saying that Saturn a while back was detected that it was heating up, so that other planets are heating up. And if, like Professor McCanny saw a year and a half, 2 years ago, that another solar system is coming in, can that be triggering the core of our planet heating up and causing the solar flares?
Sorry, another thing. Another what is coming in? What was the last part?
Another whole other solar system. Like when he was at the South Pole, he said, if you stand at the South Pole, coming in right over your head is a whole other solar system, bringing in a lot of debris. And so I was wondering if another, like, solar system is moving in, and or like this, you know, a large planetary object or asteroid on an elliptical coming in, could that be causing all these planets? I know you're not an astrophysicist, but you know a lot about a lot of stuff, and, you know, like, whatever, than the average person. And so could that be causing the solar flares in the core of our planet to heat up?
Well, Tina, the first question about the government thing, they don't bother me. I am not really doing anything. I've been fairly careful about what I release publicly on how to do certain things technologically, because I feel that we've got enough stuff in the hands of terrorism and nations that want to make war without giving them any extra. However, I do wish the government agencies had let more of this out to our industrial complex and to our universities earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late now, but I'm not doing anything, I don't think, that irritates them. I'm certainly doing things that will help people when the time comes, and that'll be a little while in the future yet, but that's that question. Now, as far as the heating of the planets, yes, I think even Mars is exhibiting increased heating. Obviously, all this, I think all this ties back to the sun itself. I'm not aware of another solar system coming that close to us.
No, either am I. Now, McCanny always thinks comets might come this way, but I don't think he said a solar system was going to come.
No,
this way.
I don't think so. It could have been a big cloud or something, or something disturbed.
Maybe a solar cloud, right?
Ah, okay, yeah, maybe something like that. I mean, I do know that there are clouds floating around that we can't detect unless they obscure some starlight or something in a telescope, but. The sun is what we've been looking at, and it has become irregular in its energy output over the last 20, 30 years. Scientists up until that time had thought that it was a steady-state star. It was just going to gradually grow old and fade out, you know. But it's had these little bursts of energy, and I say little, I mean, you know, these short-period extreme bursts of energy that throw out flares, X-22s and whatever, that kind of astound us. And fortunately, they've all missed us. They're like smoke rings of hot plasma gas coming out, and it is feasible that one of those, if it hit us directly, could start fires all over the planet from where it hit the surface. But it'd have to be a real ripper and aimed right at us to even hope to do that. So I think that it's the sun itself that is causing the increased heating of the planets, and it's probably from gravitational interaction, from solar wind interaction, and even some magnetic interaction in the solar wind with these planets.
Can you imagine just a couple degrees more than we've been getting on an annual basis, what that would do to the planet if the sun just heated up a little bit? Gosh, Stan, it'd be a disaster.
I know. I try to imagine, because it would those are average temperatures, and that means we're going to have hot spots much hotter than 2 degrees. In Virginia Beach today or yesterday, I think they had a temperature of about 100, but because of the moisture, which comes with the heat, it had a heat index of something like 109 or 111.
I know. You can barely breathe in weather like that.
No way.
It's horrible.
It is horrible.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, I have a question. Hi,
sure.
George. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, we had an earthquake back in 2001 in Seattle. It happened on my mom's birthday on February 28th. And they said there was a new fault line. They said if it was 5 miles more, it would have been almost 9.0. And I was just wondering what he thought of that.
Sorry, where was that earthquake?
Seattle?
They said it hit Tacoma area. But they said there's a new fault somewhere in Seattle I'm not sure of.
We've seen evidence of that there could be inland faults there. It's one of those areas, again, that's, at least publicly anyway, it's not sufficiently mapped due to lack of funding or opportunity, to get in there and test with seismic equipment. But I'm seeing signs of stuff at Mount St. Helens that goes all the way out into the Juan de Fuca Plate, and that's just right through that area. In fact, my brother and his family live there in Tacoma, so I have a vested interest in looking at those things for them.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you being part of the program. First-time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
It is wonderful to talk to you. I've been trying for weeks to get in, and this is absolutely wonderful. I'm very excited. You guys have a good subject tonight.
It's your lucky day.
It is my lucky day, for sure. Well, my question is, I have many friends, I have heard this from others, that have a theory about Yellowstone. It is said, I guess, that the Mayan calendar ends in 2012. I suppose that many people believe that that is the end of the world. And I have many friends who have the theory that Yellowstone is going to be the cause of it. Yellowstone basically exploding on all of us and leaving basically only China to keep going.
Well, I tell you, if Yellowstone does go, it is going to be a disaster for us. There's no doubt about that.
I don't think that it'll take the whole planet out, though. I do think it'll severely impact civilization if it does, but I don't really think it will go as bad as it did last time. For a number of reasons, and one of them is that it is real close to the fractures that run down through the western side of Colorado and down through Utah, and then down through Nevada and off to the Southern California and round and up the other way up through Idaho and up around Mount St. Helens. That whole chunk of land that's bounded by that area, I just said, is going to fracture and break, and I think it may release the pressure on that huge, huge magma pool underneath Yellowstone, and we may see a lot of steam and lava flows and perhaps some eruptive steam explosions on the western side of the Yellowstone caldera. But I don't think it will be as well contained when the events that will trigger it do happen because of the pressure being released by fractures to the west of it. However, that's just my idea, and I think we're going to endure through that as a world, but I do think the United States will have other problems that will take it right into the Stone Age in some place.
I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine the things this world, this country has to deal with? The earth change problems, the political problems, the Middle Eastern problems, the terrorist problems. You know what? I'm glad we're all in this together, Stan, because that's the way we can stay strong.
It is, and by sharing the information from various places and putting ideas for solutions out, we do help each other hope to endure and survive these things and come out of it better. I still would rather live in the 1950s and have Dairy Queen hamburgers with the girls come out and roller skate.
Fat chance of that happening, Mr.
Dale. I know.
But let's hope we're not back to the biblical days in terms of living in stone houses.
Well, if we do, we better put mortar that's made out of tar or something that gives a bit.
Yeah, you got that right. Hey, Stan, thanks for being on the program. Say again, give Holly our best, okay?
I will, George. Good night.
Stan Dale. Man, he knows his stuff. I'll be back in a moment. Michael Cremo coming in as we talk about planetary things that have to do with mankind. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.